Thank you so much for having me back to speak and to play my music, Get the Word in Life. As I look around the room and see all these wonderful, familiar friends, it just really warms my heart and enhances what I'd like to say today about the connections of music and spirituality, which are so tied into the idea of community. And when I walk into this room, I just really am overtaken by the sense of community that you've created here. The last time I was here was in 2007, and I gave a talk again on music and spirituality, but it was on how the Greco-Roman world and then the Renaissance saw the connections of music and healing. So today the focus is going to be more on the Celtic tradition, but there are many similarities and many veins that kind of run through in kind of a global way. So I'd like to start, it's interesting that today is the Feast of St. Columba, because when I was doing my research, I came across, actually I'll just read it to you, this quote about St. Columba, who was one of the founders, the founder of Iona Abbey. So I was going to get to this later on, but in Scottish mythology, the idea is the motif of a saint's spirit going to heaven accompanied by the beautiful music of angels. And that's found in the late 11th century manuscript where we have a description of the departing soul of St. Columba of Iona being summoned to heaven. And the quote is that he went with two songs to heaven after his cross. So I'm struck by the, and drawn in to the Celtic tradition, part of course, my own lineage or DNA ancestry, but part of it is just the very strong connection of music and spirituality, and music and Christianity, Celtic Christianity. Celtic spirituality and Celtic Christianity are really very interwoven. As Philip Newell talks about the idea of synthesis, that to incorporate in the early Christian church, which was, 432 AD is when St. Patrick brought Christianity to Ireland, that there's a very strong tie with bringing music in as well. And in fact, the harp is the national symbol of Ireland. Mm-hmm. And Guinness beer. and also, tomorrow is the fall equinox. The ancient Celts were tied in the idea of music into the four cross points of the cycles of the year. So there were four cross points, which were in between the equinox and the solstice. So the first would be February 1st in Bulk, which was a feast of St. Bridget. And then May 1st, Beltane, that's another cross point in between the spring equinox to the summer solstice. And then August 1st, Lammas, summer solstice to spring fall equinox. And then November 1st, Samhain, which is in between the fall equinox and winter solstice. So those four, the idea was that music would kind of bring in those seasons, would harbinger those seasons. And so today I'm going to talk about how music was seen as a bridge or as a portal to the other world, the idea of the world in between, the unseen, the invisible. It's like when you're looking, and artists know this, when you're looking at objects, you see we're seeing the atoms, but we're not seeing the spaces in between. And there's, when you look at, in science books or whatever, an atom, you see there's a lot of space in between the protons and the nucleus and neutrons, whatever it is. So I'm not a scientist, obviously very right-brained. So it's the idea that the other world is a world that exists in our plane in some way, but it's that space in between that we tune into. And music, more than any other art form, I think, can really draw us into that other space. Part of the reason being that it speaks to soul, it touches us on a soul level, and it is also tied in to the idea of emotion. So that when, and that is significant for working with, which is what I do in the community, working with people who are getting ready to transition or who have dementia or Alzheimer's. And I've seen very striking results with working with people who are supposedly, you know, until very far stages of Alzheimer's and dementia, but the music speaks to them and they're able to, they can't follow thought patterns and sentences, but they know the lyrics to songs that they haven't heard in a very long time. So that really touches me. So music speaks to us on an emotional level and it touches soul. So that's one way of saying that music is connected to the Celtic otherworld. So I'd like to start, I'd like to just play a song, a Celtic song, an Irish song called Enini, E-I-N-I-N-I. And if you can just take a moment to just settle and pray, meditate on the season of fall, which is significant of the harvest and abundance. So what comes to mind in your life if you think of that season as a metaphor? What comes to your life of what is wanting to be harvested right now in the metaphor of the season of fall, which is the abundant harvest? If you've been to the, haven't been to the farmer's market lately, I strongly suggest going on Saturday because you will really see the manifestation of the season of, harvest season. It's really quite beautiful, the colors and the beautiful offerings that are given to us from the plant. So so when I play the song, think of what in your life is wanting to be harvested at the moment. Thank you. Okay, so see what comes up for you with all that. Maybe write down a word or two about it, and perhaps we can discuss that in our discussion group at the end. I don't have a belt, so. Okay, what I'd like to do is talk about each of the chapters also when we break out into a discussion group, and just what in each of those chapters really, really speaks to us, like what words really came out of the page in each of the chapters, which interestingly are based on musical metaphors. So let's go over that a little bit just to get us into the space of the contents of this book. The series, this book focuses on the idea of the forgotten aspects of Celtic Christianity, in which he maintains that the focus was on the creation and Christ being at the heart of creation, and that we are in listening to that heartbeat of God, which is a very musical metaphor, the idea of listening to that rhythm of the universe. So Newell, quote unquote, ignites us with the possibilities of transformation that can come from this ancient spiritual tradition. So he's working with the idea of transformation. And to me, music is a tool for transformation. And nothing can shift us out of a mood or in and out of a mood more than music. And I know that when I want to jump for myself, when I really want to jump start my own creative work, that I put on music immediately. Does anyone else find that? That music can really shift the mood more than anything. So it's that idea of transformation for music. And I'm going to be talking specifically about the harp and how the harp was seen through the ages for thousands of years as an instrument of peace and healing and shifting of consciousness. So also in this book is the idea that he asks us to remember the goodness, the essential goodness with each of us, and to focus on the goodness of the individual and the goodness of the community and the goodness of on earth, of our earth, because as we know that what we give our attention to grows, good or bad, whatever we give our attention to. So if we focus on the good in our community and the good in the individual, that is what's going to be constellated and really shine and really be enhanced. So Christ of the Celts, the book, gives us another picture, another lens to see who Christ is today in our lives and Christ's mind, combining it with the ancient reverence for being in harmony with nature. So I like that idea of being in harmony. So I'd like to do a little exercise now, and just each of us, starting with the aisle rows, of this row here and this row here, turn to the person next to you and just go down the row and say, look in the person's eye and say to them, may the harmony of Christ stay with us. Kind of pass it down. How did that feel? So I love that term that he uses, the idea of the harmony of Christ.
Do you find it in a certain place? Is there a
no, I'll have to look around. I've got lots of, I can email you on that. Okay. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the Celtic spiritual ideas on music and on the harp itself specifically. And going through these chapters and the musical terms, we have, you know, chapter one, the introduction he calls a prelude. Chapter one is called the memory of the song, which is where he gives us the idea that the Garden of Eden, this is a Celtic idea, that the Garden of Eden is not a place from which we are separated. It's more a way of being that we're separated from within ourselves. It's another deep dimension of our own being from which we can get cut off from. But if we tune into that realm, we can be back in that Garden of Eden. Does anyone ever find that? When you're in the zone, you're back in the Garden of Eden, no matter what is going on around you. And I think that that's very important right now. We're living in a time that's really very, that seems to me more chaotic than usual. And honestly, in my life, it's not that chaotic. You know, my personal life is okay right now, but which is good. But it seems that, you know, the idea is that no matter what's going on around us in the world, that we need to stay centered and balanced, and to stay in that Christ mind. If we don't do that, I really don't think we're going to make it. I think it's important to stay in how we see that Christ mind. So the going back to the Garden of Eden is really getting back also metaphorically into our own center. Music can be used as a way to balance. I use it as a way to balance the chakras of the Eastern system. You know, is anyone familiar with the idea of the chakras? There are 7 energy vortexes in the body. I don't know if they're metaphorical or real. Don't ask me that. But those 7 centers are connected to, according to some beliefs, they're connected to the 7 colors of the spectrum: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. And they're also connected to the 7 notes on the Western scale, starting with C. So C would be red, D would be orange, E would be yellow, G would be green, I skipped one. F is green. Okay, G is light blue, and so forth, indigo, and then violet at the top of the top of the head. So if you actually, off topic for a minute, if you take that exercise every morning and just think of your chakras as a flat, almost like a record player, a record, an LP, think of the chakra as a wheel, the word means wheel, and spin those chakras every day, focusing on kind of a pale version of all of those colors. It really does this. It does an energizing it can be an energizing technique for you. Of course, if you're related to the 7 notes on the scale, it's even better. So that idea of Garden of Eden, that we live in our own self-imposed exile, and that music can help us stay balanced and connect back to that inner Garden of Eden. Chapter 2, he talks about the idea of a forgotten tune, that we have forgotten that there is a tune deep within the human soul that we're invited to remember. So I would really like you all to think, to get in touch with your own, to use the metaphor of the inner symphony, and that you're a symphony, you're a show of sound, light, and color, and each of us gives off vibration of sound, light, and color. Color is connected to music, and so actually when you look at a painting, you're seeing the colors, but also those colors are giving off vibration. So when I look around this room, all the beautiful colors and beings and light beings, but I also see, there's a symphony that's going on, and what struck me when I walked in here was that sense of harmony and that really beautiful sense in here. So to get in touch with the idea, you know, in chapter 2, A Forgotten Tune, that what is the tune deep within yourself that is wanting to come out right now at this time? You know, we're really at a crossroads. And so what are we wanting to send out from our own inner symphony? What is your, you know, when maybe it's a time when you're working with a symphony, think of the Pachelbel canon. There's one motif, but that motif is repeated and repeated in different ways, in soft, loud, you know, loud, soft, with different instruments, but it's all playing the same basic motif, and I'll kind of go over what that motif is on the harp. So think about that. What is the symphony that I'm wanting others to hear from me? Chapter 3 talks about the rhythm of the earth and his experience, Philip Newell's experience in nature, and having an experience of what the ancients called the harmony of the spheres. That relates to the ideas of Pythagoras and Plato that I talked about in 2007, that the 7 the planets known at the time, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, were the six planets known at the time, and then the Sun and the Moon. So there were eight spheres that were known at the time. And then the ninth sphere, of course, being the whole divine monochord. So it's that each planet whirs at a specific note and a specific rhythm and vibration. Actually, there was an article in the New York Times a couple of years ago about that scientists discovered this far-off planet, that it resonates to B-flat 27, you know, degrees below, like 27 to the power of 27 below what we would hear as a B-flat. So it was obviously very low and not audible to us. But each planet works to a different rhythm and to a different note. And then together, it creates the harmony of the sphere. So again, the idea of balance that Newell talks about, that to be in nature and to hear that music of the spheres in nature, and countless musicians and composers, of course, have constructed beautiful symphonies having to do with just listening to the sound of nature and the sound of the trees and the rites of spring, the pines of Rome, and so forth. In chapter 4, he talks about God speaking to us through the words of Scripture and through the elements of creation. Again, the music of the garden. So nature was a very important part of the Celtic tradition. And the unseen part of nature are the elementals, the fairies, water fairies of earth, fire, water, and air, according to the Celtic tradition, which were just as real as everyday, you know, ordinary life. But it was a question of tuning in, quote unquote, to be able to hear it. Of course, sometimes you get hit over the head hearing it. I just had one experience with this to give you as an example. I was in, has anyone ever been to Glastonbury, England, the Cornish coast, southern England? It's a very enchanted, beautiful area, Glastonbury Abbey. It's where all the King Arthur legends supposedly took place. Okay, Tintagel, Avalon, and so forth. So I was at Glastonbury Tor, which is an ancient shrine, and Glastonbury Abbey, and I was looking around at the beautiful flowers, and they were larger than life. They were more beautiful, they were brighter, they were really, really alive, and I just got the one idea. I wonder if they would mind if I just picked one little flower to take home, just one little flower. And I got the loudest no coming right out of that little flower. And it was this, it sounded to me like a gnome or an elf, just like yell, you know. But it was kind of like a bird, but I couldn't argue with the synchronicity of the timing of, maybe it was the crow picking up what I was going to say, but what I was going to do, but it was a very clear no. So, you know, sometimes if you tune in, sometimes you get hit over the head with tuning in, you know. So it was, I highly recommend going there. Okay, and then The Sound of Love is the next chapter 5, and that's about listening to the heartbeat of the Creator. And he talks about the sacred longing for union. And what I love about that is the search for the idea of the inner beloved within each of us, searching for our own union, that according to the Jungian tradition, we're split. You know, we have a duality of light and shadow. But if we can integrate both and be aware that we have what our inferior functions are, the shadow, it doesn't mean it's dark or bad, it just means the other side of it, that if we can integrate or just be aware of it, then we're not going to project it onto other people. So it's the idea, if we can have that longing, that union, and Dawn George is in the room, so I'm not going to say too much more about Jungian psychology. She was one of my professors in the history of Jungian psychology. We'll never forget that. Great class. So I think I got it. So, but it's the idea of integrating in being aware of the shadow. If you have an inferior function, then just be aware of that, and then it's one step toward healing. So the sacred longing for union within, and then constellating that out, you know, manifesting that out in union with your proper, you know, everyone. It's kind of, I believe, paired off, or can be paired off with the right person at some point, kind of when the t- timing is right, the person kind of appears. So that that longing for union, we project it onto longing for union with the other, but it's first getting in touch with our own, you know, male-female balance and our own balance, and then lo and behold, you know, the that can manifest in meeting people you're more resonant with, whether it's in community or friendships or relationships. And what I really liked is that his, what really spoke to me in that chapter was when he said, all shall be well when all are well. So, I'm reminded of that Woody Allen movie, Annie Hall, and he said, I really can't enjoy a meal when I know somebody in Africa is starving. You know, it's just that idea that how can we be well if the other, if we're all connected and some part of us is not, is out of balance, we're all going to pick it up. You know, we're going to really pick that up, even if it's in the middle of the night. Has anyone noticed sometimes we're getting up in the middle of the night and it's not anything in particular going on in our own lives, but we're picking up some free-floating, something isn't quite right somewhere. And sometimes it's in the middle of the night and we have that quiet space that we can tune into. We're not in our everyday world of tasks and so forth, so we can really tune into what's going on. So if that happens, just send out a prayer, you know, to stay in the Christ mind, to stay in peace, to stay in home. Just send out a prayer. And don't tune into the other. Tune into the, I mean, don't tune into the negative of what's going on. That, you know, don't watch the news before you go to sleep. Promise me you won't watch the news before you go to sleep, okay? All right, so you're not going to stay in balance that way, if that's your last thought before bed. And by the way, the ancient Celts believe that it's your last thought before transitioning that takes you kind of into your a reverie. When you cross over, you're going to see, according to the Celtic tradition, what you believe you're going to see. Of course, after that, it all, you know, goes on from there, but it's your very first thought. So don't watch, and it's the same thing with sleep, don't watch the news right before bed. Okay, the next and I will bring in metaphors of transition and people who are making their transition, because most of my work in the community, it has kind of moved and cycled into working with people making their transition. And it took a while, you know, years actually, and I'm interested in actually playing the harp for people making their transition. Was volunteering with Hospice of Santa Barbara for quite a number of years doing that, and doing some work in the palliative care division, 6 Central of Cottage. But lo and behold, and I just knew that it was kind of seen as entertainment, playing the harp as entertainment for people, but it really isn't. It's really playing with a lot of training and consciousness about how to play for someone who's transitioning. It's not entertainment. You don't go in there and play, you know, Phantom of the Opera, I don't know, whatever. I mean, you could if you did it right, but it's working with modal music and it's a specific system, and I trained at the Hospice of San Diego, who really has the system right, I think, and it really works for me, at least. So lo and behold, starting in January, I got a call from a visiting nurse that they got a grant, finally, to pay people to do this. So I was just doing it, you know, and I still just do it anyway, but it was nice, you know, to be able to get paid to, they started a whole music program, and so I'm doing that quite a bit right now, going to either Mission Terrace or, you know, in the community and a little bit in the L.A. area, but mostly the different homes. It's amazing how many little senior homes are in our community, these little tiny little senior homes, really quite sweet, or going to people's homes, or going to the hospital, or going to some of the, you know, Alberti and other places, and Serenity House, and just playing for people. Last week, I had the experience of playing for two people who actually made their transition. Usually I play right before or after, sometimes after for the family, but this was, I walked in, I really had a sense I had to get over to that patient at Villa Alomar, and I walked in and he was just transitioning when I walked in. And so it's, you know, it's a lot of what I learned is from the ancient Celtic tradition of the Anamkara. Beautiful book on the Anamkara. Oh yeah, we also at the Casa de Maria there was a wonderful program, the Sacred Art of Living and Dying program from Bend, Oregon. Was anyone else in that? Yeah, that was really wonderful. And Richard talked a lot about the idea of the Anamkara. So this is, and I do it through music, but that's my tool. But there are other ways to be with people who are transitioning besides working with music. That works for me, and it works, I think, for the patients because they don't have to talk and they don't have to feel like they have to entertain you and talk a lot, but they can just be present. And the music is kind of a third object, so it's not just between you and them. It's a third thing that comes in. It's the idea of being present as an Anamkara, a soul friend for someone before, during, and even after the transition. This is found in many other world traditions, in the Tibetan tradition as well, that you're prepared to, you know, be, to walk with someone during that whole period and afterwards, and to be present for them afterwards. And there's no greater honor than for someone who's getting ready to transition to ask me to be asked to play for their memorial service after, when they know. And not that they ever know exactly when that's going to be, but that's an honor, because when I'm doing the memorial, I know it's, you know, part of it is for friends and family, but part of it is for them in some ineffable way. I would sense that possibly that would be happening. And it does create a sense of comfort through the sounds of the harp strings. Okay. So that leads me to the idea of, you might want to take a moment and think about what, just take a moment and close your eyes, what comes to mind when you think of a harp? Yes? So the harp is exactly has been seen as an instrument of relaxation and peace for thousands of years, and of course in scripture we have many references to the harp, 50 some odd references, and Alice McDonald pointed out this morning that the scripture, can you tell us again?
Well, it's the Today Psalm, one of the Today Psalm says praise God on the harp, the timbreland harp.
Mm-hmm. And King David played the harp for King Saul to help cure him of his headaches and so forth. So in the Celtic tradition, the harp was seen as a bridge to that world of that fairy realm, and that immortals, you know, humans, could be invited into that fairy realm, which was considered just as real as this realm in that tradition. But it was the shamanic experience, that they would be invited, you know, the idea of the shamanic experience is that you're invited into that other realm to extract what is needed for the community, and then bring that knowledge back to everyday life and to the community. Joseph Campbell talked about that a lot in his Power of Myth and Hero with a Thousand Faces, the hero's journey, the idea of going into that other world, extracting the gifts, and but not just staying there, the idea of bringing it back, you want to have a use for it, bringing it back to your community. So the harp was seen as a portal, a way to be a portal in to that other realm. It's kind of as that liminal space, liminal, where we get the word limbo. Music, and especially the harp, was seen as a liminal instrument, and that it would draw you in. It also had a negative side. St. Patrick said that, well, you know, he recognized the power of music and was telling one of his proteges that we have to be careful that we don't get sucked into it. You know, he saw that it could have a dangerous aspect. We see that in Greek mythology, the siren was, you know, playing this music that would lure Odysseus and his sailors onto the rock. So that, you know, just to be, he was very aware, St. Patrick, of the uses of music. And so that, of course, everything has a shadow, and that music can be used, the Pied Piper, you know, luring the children to the mountain, you know, away from the community because he wasn't paid. Oh, there's a chapter here, Paying the Piper, which I thought was interesting. That fairy tale is quite interesting, by the way, but that's another topic. The idea of God is love, not judge. And so the idea of being paid to forgive, how many times were we given conditional love? I'll love you if you do this, if you obey, if you're what, how many times, especially, I don't know if men do this, but women often, we morph ourselves to fit into what we think the other person is going to like, so they'll like us more, you know. So it's that idea of being paid to forgive, like being, that you have, in order to be loved, you have to morph into what someone else's expectations. But what Newell says is that God is love, not judge. And I love his idea in that chapter that the idea of through union with community, for example, or relationships or friends or whatever, proper, you know, right relationship, that instead of blending, you become more of who you are. So if you're in a community or a friendship where somebody wants you to change and be something different, then maybe just run the other way. Because the idea is to have someone bring out the best, bring out who you are, and watch that blossoming, and not to impose their agenda. That's one of the things I really like about this. I really resonate to use a musical term, about the heart therapy program that I'm working with, is that it's about playing music. It's not a one-size-fits-all music therapy that you go in there and impose what you're going to play, but you walk in and you get a feeling of where the patient is at, what their background might be, what their age group might be, what their ethnicity might be, heritage, who else is in the room, what they might want to listen to. I never go in with the idea that I'm going to play music, because I'll ask them if that's what they want. And it doesn't always work. And then sometimes if the person is transitioning, what is needed is to play octaves or fifths, just playing very, very little, less is more, single notes. So it's that idea of bringing out, not imposing, but to love the other, to love the patient enough to, and this is in a way of compassion, to have compassion for the patient, to play the music that's going to bring out, that's going to be the most beneficial for them. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I'm sure you're going to want to be hearing some harp. What is our timing like?
We have about 8 minutes until we're supposed to break.
Okay, and then I'll just, after the break, maybe play what I was going to play and do my demo. Is that good? And then we can do some, what I want to do is some sharing about what, maybe during the break you can look back at the book and see what words struck you in each chapter. That's what I'd like to hear from you. And hopefully in musical metaphors, but not necessarily. Okay, so the next chapter is the Hymn of the Universe. Teilhard de Chardin, at the heart of the matter is the heart of God, and Christ being at the center of creation. So it's the idea that matter, there's no separation really in between spirit and matter. It's all one. When you look at an atom, even though I don't remember the terms from seventh grade math, that you're looking at the space in between and the protons, neutrons, and electrons. Is that it? Yeah, it just came to me. So that matter is a gift, but that we're existing in different dimensions. Scientists are discovering this now, that the dimensions aren't far away. They're all kind of here. It's just a question of tuning in. You know, what we choose to give our attention to. Okay. And then he talks about George MacLeod and... All right. George MacLeod, who is one of the founders of Iona as well, is that right?
Yeah.
And he talks about the presence in matter as well. So there's this divine presence, or it wouldn't exist. So he ends the chapter. It was in the midst of Earth's pain that MacLeod and Teilhard listened. They became kind of enlightened spiritually through the pain of being in the middle of the trenches in a war, both of them. And they heard the hymn that is as ancient as the universe and as new as today's fresh birthings of love. It is the hymn that reminds us of the harmony at the heart of creation. The harmony is the heart of creation, so that's what we want to tune into. Christ is at the center of creation and is staying in the harmony of Christ. If we don't stay in the harmony of Christ, I think it's going to be really, it can cause trouble. I've seen it in my own, okay. The hymn of cosmic sounds and intimate whispering. It is the hymn in which one theme is heard in an unending infinity of voices. It is the song of presence. It is the song of presence. So listen to the song of presence. It is the hymn of self-giving love that sets us free to be part of the healing of the universe. So do you know how when you give, don't you feel free? Don't you just feel so free of being self-giving? And I really see that here. Just look at the abundance of food and what everyone brought, and everyone is just so in harmony with doing everything. Here's a real example. Broken cadences. There, final chapter for the postlude. The idea that union releases our uniqueness again. Through union, we get uniqueness. Our uniqueness shines forth in right relationship. And so he says the self-giving gift is just bring your treasure, bring that harmony of Christ to the world. I mean, you have it here. It's all in here. It's just a beautiful symphony. So to, when we leave here, to kind of bring that spirit in with us, I know for myself, I'll walk out of here and have to stop at Albertsons or whatever and be impatient because the line is too long and, you know, get all uptight because there's nowhere to park or whatever. And so what good is it then? You know, it's the idea is not to just have it in this container where it's very easy because everybody else is kind of on the same wavelength. But when you go out into the world and we're working with beings of who are challenging, you know, not to be judgmental, but to more, and not to start preaching to them, but to just be an example. And I know I've learned much more about being Christ, working on being Christ-centered through, you know, the Carol Carricks and people at the Immaculate Heart Center and the Mission and many of our faith communities, not by preaching, but by example, just how they live their lives. So just go out and don't yell at the person behind the counter. You know, whatever. So, okay, I want to recommend, just, I want to get the academic part over with and then do the music after. I wanted to recommend two books for you. There's a new, Philip Newell has a latest book, another one out called, I haven't read it yet, so I can't really recommend it, but synchronistically, the name of it is called A New Harmony. Okay, A New Harmony. Let's think about what that might mean. There's really nothing new under the sun, but maybe a new way of seeing the world and being in harmony with each other and with the Creator. The other one that I really loved, which got me into Philip Newell, is 1 Foot in Eden on the Stages of Life. It's on, you know, from birth to death, and it's on all the different stages of life. It's a very small book, and I really resonated to that and used it in my hospice work. So,
what was that again?
1 Foot in Eden.
Mm-hmm.
By Philip Newell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also heard him speak actually in Brentwood Presbyterian a couple of years ago. It's really good. He talked about the earth, sea, and sky, the three realms of the other world, as being the sanctuary. That's the sanctuary, the earth, the sea, and the sky. Dr. Carney, Michael Carney, head of palliative care at Cottage Hospital, he talks about the three realms of the other world being more the three realms of the psyche, you know, the outer world, the connecting to the core, which really doesn't have a name. It's that so much more awesome than anything we can imagine. It's just called the core, the no thing. And then that intermediary, which is our own solar spirit. So what else did I want to... Oh, the idea in Celtic spirituality of the eternal feminine. And the idea of the three, so Bridget, the idea of Bridget later becoming Saint Bridget, of the triple goddess, the maiden, mother, crone, the idea of the threes is very much a part of Celtic Christianity and Celtic spirituality. The idea of the treskelly, like a tricycle, treskelly. It's a triple spiral. Treskelly. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. So it's that the idea of the triple spiral, the Okay, so the treskelly and that, how that is a pattern of creation. The music of creation is in threes as well. The triad in music, as Tom would know, is one of the basic building blocks of music. The triangle in geometry, one of the basic building blocks. So it's that idea that all of matter is created from musical, geometrical patterns. The Fibonacci spiral and the golden ratio, the idea of that nautilus pattern, the shell pattern, the spiral. The golden ratio is connected to the spiral, and then the idea of the circle of fifths, the circle of fifths in music is also connected into that spiral as well, and that's part of the work that we're doing with hospice, is working with that golden spiral and how that connects to the circle of fifths, and how that is connected to this other idea in Irish, ancient Irish music, which is the three noble strains of Ireland. In order to be a harper, who were mostly men, by the way, back then, now they're mostly women, in order to be a harper in ancient, in early medieval Ireland and ancient times, you had to be able to do three things. Induce sleep, merriment and joy, and sadness, like introspection, melancholy, not really sadness, but more reflectiveness. And so what I'll do after the break is show you and playing songs in those three modes, and also not leaving a patient in the sadness or the sleep, well, sometimes in the sleep, but leaving them more in the merriment when you're done playing for them. So I'll show you an example of playing the three noble strains of Ireland, and that comes from the mythic imagination as well. But why don't we just take a break right now and creatively listen to each other.